The following is a quarantine recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so seriously, people stare curiously. She got a natural way, her hips sway furiously. Yet luxuriously, carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you've seen this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do what you like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head, what we're loving on, and what we're hating on, what we might be, and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, puppies, and political puppets, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and rebellion. It's a challenging time, a changing time, a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed.
She got a razor sharp whip and she just won't quit. Flaunting it, body built like a house made out of brick. She got the smile, the style, and finesse, compounded with a blessed profound intellect.
Our guest this week is a powerhouse. She is phenomenal. She prefers a bio that simply says she is a filmmaker and writer from Detroit. However, I'm not going to allow our guest to flatten her accomplishments. She is, in fact, an award-winning filmmaker and writer from Detroit. Her most recent works include the Frameline feature documentary Treasure, the HBO documentary It's a Hard Truth, Ain't It?, the BET docuseries Finding Justice, and Lifetime's Emmy-nominated, y'all heard me say that? Emmy-nominated, Surviving R. Kelly. And she was named one of 2019's Time 100's most influential people in the whole entire-ass world. I knew that because we call her Dreamy Fresh for short, and we have her on the pod with us today. So welcome, welcome to Dream Hampton.
Thank you. And you know what happened since the last time you downloaded my bio?
What?
I won a Peabody.
You understand me. You understand me. Yeah. That's huge. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Listen, Dream is over here editing my own script. And that's okay because that's just what time it is.
Hi.
So welcome, Dream. I'm glad to have you back on the pod.
Thank you, Alicia.
We always start off with the same question, so I just want to talk about what your quarantine life has been like. And tell me, have you developed any unique habits live and direct for Miss Rona?
Yes. Okay. So when you said this is my second time on, we should admit that we taped this once and then...
I'm on it.
And then the world changed. It was like...
That's right.
So there's a pre-Memorial Day, you know, pre-George Floyd being... lynched and murdered on tape, and there's a post world, and my quarantine is organized in that way too. So, I mean, during the quarantine, I was doing what a lot of folks were doing. I was also doing like a deep dive into World War II, and for some reason, and then cooking, and you know, my daughter and I were quarantined together, and. And then the revolution started, you know, so the work just ramped up. I mean, because I was absolutely watching, you know, binge watching. And then now I'm not. Mm. Now I'm on 12 to 13 Zoom calls a day. Mm. And life has resumed in a way. So I don't know, both and. So it's kind of like still in quarantine, so I don't trust whatever the U.S. is saying. And when I say World War II deep dive, it started with this kind of looking at Japan and then moving backwards. And I'm sure I was looking at Japan because of you know, just to look at their models for how they've been dealing with the virus. And so I don't listen to whatever state or governor I'm in at the time. I've only been in two different states since this happened. Well, maybe three. I've been mostly still, though. But yes. Mm-hmm. How about you? Mm-hmm. Which skills have you learned?
Well, you know what? My quarantine life recently is all about this puppy.
You have a puppy?
That Malachi and I just got 2 days ago now. The puppy is an American bulldog.
Amazing.
And his name is Charlie Nelson Garza. He is 8 weeks old and he is freaking adorable, but he is also pissing and shitting all over my damn house. And so you will know that this is like the runway for me and Malachi on our parenting tip. And so far, so good. You know what I'm saying? But Charlie ain't no joke. Let me just tell you.
Oh,
Charlie ain't no joke.
I love that. I love that you have a bulldog. That's so perfect for you too.
So, you know, these days in quarantine, I'm looking for good TV and I'm looking for good books. And you create TV, you create documentaries, you create content for the people. So I'm particularly interested from the perspective of a creator and an artist. What is the best thing on TV right now for you and why? And then also for all those people who are like, I don't watch TV, what are you reading right now to help keep you inspired?
I used to be an I don't watch TV person, and then TV got good.
Mm-hmm. I know, that's why I said it.
But no, I've been a TV person for a long time, at least since like Dexter and True Blood.
Dexter, yes.
Remember that? I rewatched that recently.
I do, and True Blood was the shit.
Yes. I was watching Homeland, and when it ended, it was right before everything began. It made me rewatch The Americans, which is better. You know, which is far more nuanced, which, you know, I mean, that show is that might be one of the best things to be on basic cable. Yeah, The Americans. And then my favorite thing in the world is Peaky Blinders, which is very much a genre gangster piece. I mean, but like set in, you know, working class Birmingham post-World War I with a Romany family, Cillian Murphy killing it, really strong women characters. And then there's this new show. Is it P-War? It's this show that's set in Atlanta on the pole. And I may destroy
not on
you,
the
but
pole.
What's it called? P-War? I don't want to mess it up because I'm not trying to disrespect the show, but I it's on my queue. Like I have it like queued up and I have Michaela's I May Destroy You queued up.
Oh, so that one is excellent. And then books?
Yeah. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Eddie Glaude's book on Baldwin. Yeah, he has this new book on Baldwin that's coming out that has me super excited. I am revisiting a book that I hope to turn into a film by Bessie Head, set in Botswana, called Maru, a very thin book about a love triangle. So that when I literally just look at my bedside and that's at my bedside. And then the other book at my bedside, and it's almost always at my bedside, is Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower.
Yesterday was the 7-year anniversary of the inception of Black Lives Matter. And as per use, you were there from the beginning, you know what I'm saying? So as I was thinking about what we might chat about today, Dream, I just am so curious to hear your thoughts and your reflections on this latest iteration. What feels new to you and maybe what feels like the same old, same old?
Well, I actually, when I think of your generation and movement, I think actually right before Trayvon, I think of that New Year's Day when we lost Oscar Grant. It was a couple of things. It was this, you know, dealing with at once the revelatory nature of video, dealing with the fetishization of violence, like, you know, the fact of these kind of on-camera murders. And then, yes, and then this generation that, and now I guess we're moved on to Generation Y, but this, I would say that Oscar Grant was certainly led by millennials in Oakland. And just watching some of the strategy between, you know, shutting BART down, watching some of what, you know, came to, we saw in other cities after this, which was the kind of arsenal that the police had. They brought out a tank on y'all. Mm-hmm. So all of those things, and I'm not saying they were new. I mean, obviously Kent State, you know, is them, you know, National Guard killing four white folks, you know, so that's militarization. And so it's not that there's a history that this country has of this, but watching this new generation take it on with this, you know, added, there are a couple of things that, you know, are different in this moment. One is this hyper-documentation. So this 17-year-old girl that held steady as she recorded George Floyd's murder, you know, this unflinching recording that she was able to take, knowing that any minute, any of those police officers who were aiding in George Floyd's murder, who were standing kind of guard as he committed this lynching, that they could have turned on her, you know? So that question of documentation, that we all have phones in our pockets, and then everything else that your generation brought to the movement, which was like a lens on gender, a demand for self-care in the moment, not at some later time that folks usually never get to. I'm not saying that y'all have figured it out or got it all right, but those were all things that I know I'm Gen X and my friends and I were like, wow, this is new and amazing. And then in the past 4 years, you know, like to see the gap kind of close around Black Lives Matter being this accepted movement. And I mean, accepted in a wide way. You know what I mean? Like this multiracial, multigenerational, this, there never should have been a question, you know, of this, this utterance that you said when, you know, Trayvon was killed. Like, of course our lives matter. I'm sure for you, it was both an affirmation and something that you never question, you know? But, you know, to see the gap close, and I mean, we're just in a different place than we were with Ferguson. And I'm not saying that's all in the in great ways. I mean, when, you know, this also happens to movements. When your thing goes mainstream, then you have to deal with all of that, you know? So to see, like, newscasters kind of not blink and not, like, call Black Lives Matter movement a terrorist movement or, you know, whatever the police talking points were, is a huge breakthrough. And the work that was seeded in between these two kind of, like, between Ferguson and Minneapolis, like, these explosions in movement energy, the work that was seated in between those things is so important, because not only do I'm on Martha's Vineyard right now, and there are like Black Lives Matter signs everywhere. And so not only is that true, but there's also an abolitionist framework at the forefront of this movement right now. And I would have never put my money on that. I might have thought that Black Lives Matter would become like a wider movement. I don't think that I thought it was going to happen in this moment. I thought we were so Trump obsessed. I know I certainly was. I was like way into the Russia trial. I mean, the impeachment trial and all of his, like, it's just, you know, I've definitely been following that thread. And I didn't think that we were going to have, oh, you know, racial justice movement and possible revolution. In fact, on our last call before George Floyd, I told you that I'm a revolutionary, but there's no revolution right now. So
yes, you did. Know. Yes, you did. Look at you calling it into existence, right? Because the universe was like, nah, this bitch is still a revolutionary.
I was like, I'm a revolutionary who owes money to Neiman Marcus or whatever.
Well, look, I got some questions because a lot of your reflections resonate a lot with me. I think I'm 7 years later still processing, right? But one thing that hasn't changed is the 5Gs in my DMs. And I know you know what I'm talking about when I talk about 5Gs, right? Because alongside this kind of resistance, rebellion, but also an embedding of Black Lives Matter, of abolitionist principles into our frameworks as a nation, which we could talk about, there is also always a corresponding backlash. And I know you know a little bit about 5Gs being all up in your DMs. I mean, as a result of the incredible work that you did on Surviving R. Kelly, I mean, I know that there was a lot of backlash in terms of kind of from the left and the right, where as we start to kind of break apart the stranglehold of these kinds of stories that serve to try and entrench power as it is, there is always going to be that kind of, I don't know if I want to call it equal, but an opposite reaction. And so I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that, Dream. Like, do you feel like there's any utility in paying attention to the character of this kind of backlash? What does this kind of backlash mean for the prospects of further success and further gains in terms of this movement?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm sorry that that's happening. I probably can't imagine it at the scale that you're dealing with in this moment. And for the past 7 years.
I think
you can. Yeah, no, like, I can't. I mean, yes, I have faced Nas's fans and, you know, R. Kelly's fans. The movement backlash that I have gotten has hurt the most. And I bet that anyone who's been visible in movement spaces, even for 5 minutes, can show you their backlash. If it was letters that Fannie Lou Hamer was getting, we know that Malcolm and Martin were getting letters, both real and drafted by the CIA. So, I mean, this is the burden of visibility, it's the pain. So I don't have anything wise to say. I mean, I go back and forth. I don't desire visibility, so I don't plan for it, meaning I don't have like a publicist, I don't have a strategy, I don't have a social media plan, like tweets that are planned. I'm often shutting down those platforms. But I'm old enough now to divest from them. I mean, I was on it for a decade. I don't plan. So that was enough for me, but I wasn't like, I didn't come of age with these platforms. So I'm okay leaving them. Mm-hmm. So it's, none of this is like prescriptive. I don't have any advice really. I know that it hurts. I know that I happen to be a critic, you know, and since I was a child, like I would write critical reviews of movie reviews.
Yes, I would love to read a Dream Hampton critical review from like 15 years old.
Oh, I'm girl, fucking nine here for this. And 10. I'm like, I yes, found one recently. Yes. It's hilarious. But I mean, you know, I'm a Virgo, and so I think that criticism, and I know a lot of people disagree with that. They're like, you can't grow from criticism, you only grow from love. Like, how did Cancer tell me that? I actually believe that one can grow from criticism. So even when people are like calling me trash or whatever they're calling me, mm-hmm. sometimes I can, you know, hear past that and hear the criticism itself, you know? Sometimes I can hear mm-hmm. the pain or the patriarchy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I like say with the Nas stuff or just hip hop in general, and I don't want to talk about hip hop, but like I can hear the patriarchy. I can hear that they have a problem mm-hmm. that I have access. They have a problem that I have access and talent. Mm-hmm. They have a problem that I was there to witness the history that they dream about. And so I see and hear all of that inside whatever they're saying about me, right? Mm-hmm. Other times I've just heard criticism. There are times, particularly dealing with your generation, that I have had definitely a problem, but also trying to understand, like there have been real language things, like language around violence, language around abuse, really, quite frankly, a lot of sexual violence language, people that fight in that space, that kind of language gets thrown around in all kinds of ways. And so that has been difficult for me to parse through so that someone who was offended by me or someone that I was even, say, mean to or short-tempered with or whatever with or impatient with, I'm like notoriously impatient, then accuse me of abuse. Like those kinds of things I've both heard, owned what I hope I can own to grow because I don't want to be impatient. I'm not bragging that I can lose my temper or be impatient. especially on productions or in work situations. None of that is like awesome. And it might also be a part of every generation before y'all, you know? It might be this normalized kind of behavior, and it might even be abuse. Like, I may even accept that, you know what I mean? But I've had this problem with like language. And so that has been hard, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and it's not been hard in that, like, I'm rejecting it. First of all, it's always hard to be, you know, called things that you fight against, you know? And so we get defensive immediately and we don't want to see ourselves as that. But I think that if we are truly, you know, abolitionists and we are like talking about abolitionist frameworks, then, you know, Grace Lee Boggs, who mentored my daughter for a while in Detroit Summer and who also mentored one of my really good friends, is, you know, and a Detroit philosopher and just OG, is someone who near the end of her life went from being like this, you know, Marxist, socialist Marxist, which she died being, and a revolutionary, but also like having this kind of conversation about the personal and what we needed to do in order to evolve. And it, a lot of it felt soft. I remember her being on panels near the end of her life with people like Angela Davis or Robin Kelly. And they kind of treated her like she was on some Eckhart Tolle shit. Like, like, facts, you know, like, facts. What are you talking about right now? And she, you know, and, but those questions were important and they remain important. And so I don't know. I try to grow from them. I know that there are also like chaos agents and like people who are just deeply wounded and out here flailing and out here throwing stuff around. And people who have no space for other people's humanity, even when they are in need of great forgiveness all the time. And that all scales up. Like, so some of this sounds like I'm talking about friendships or relationships or lovers, but all of the examples I'm thinking of are like movement things, you know? And not just petty internet drama here. I'm talking about organizations and formations that I've been in real life, of course, definitely online, but definitely in real life.
Mm-hmm. Woo, there's a lot in there.
I know.
There's a lot in there. There's a way in which I feel pretty strongly that people don't understand the consequences when folk step out in whatever way you step out to create, to offer what you've created. And I go back and forth between these are like, you know, this is some lonely person in their basement who, you know, is getting gully on the other side of a computer screen to this is the FBI, right? To actually, maybe this is a movement that is trying to actually be a counterweight to the success of this movement. And what does it mean for our forces to really keep pushing, but also take seriously that whenever you create earthquakes, whether that be in culture or policy or at the intersection of both, that there is prone to be an equal and opposite reaction, right? That's just science, which a lot of these people don't believe in, but we won't get into that today. Right. And it is, it's deeply rooted in the values and the worldview that itself is being directly challenged, right? I can't tell you how many messages I get in my DMs that are all about me being queer and how because I'm queer, I'm somehow a fraud to the Black liberation movement, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not new. I mean, me and Patrice were hearing this stuff when she and I met, you know, back in 2005. Mm-hmm. So this isn't new, but it is still disturbing to me in a way because I resonate with what you're saying in terms of, you know, some of the hardest kind of backlash to take is from quote unquote within our own ranks. But then I also struggle to make sense of how are we preparing ourselves for this moment by both pushing forward as much as we can with the opening that we have now, and also not taking for granted that in the same way that we deeply want and deeply need change, you know, the forces that we're up against also deeply want and deeply need what we are not offering. So
no, and I feel that.
I'm in the soup of all that.
And you are. And that's the part that I, you know, you don't need my pity, but I do. I feel bad for you for that. But then, like, if we get past, like, me caring for you, Alicia, as my friend and younger sister, like, I also look at...
Oh, yay! I always wanted an older sister, Dave! Yes! Yes! New level achieved! Status unlocked! Yes! Yes, yes. I wasn't finna let that slip. Shit, I heard it.
But, I mean, you are. And I just, like, I also, like, am thinking that all of these are still connected to visibility. Like, the reason that we are targets is... That's, you know, right, because of this visibility. The reason that it feels like we don't have time to parse out what is important in whatever criticism or backlash we're getting, not about our, first of all, I'm not talking about those folks. You know, those are people who are enemies of progress, and they're not all, they don't always have to be enemies of progress. They too can evolve. I'm sure there was, there was absolutely a time when I had a bioessentialist view of fucking womanhood, you know? I was raised that way, you know? So I would love to give, like, to be generous and be graceful with those who are on their journey up to a point. Like, when you're denying people of their humanity, when you're attacking them, then, you know, then no, who has time for that, right? And then when I think about, so, like, say Grace Lee Boggs is on a panel or in conversation with Robin Kelly and Angela Davis. Those aren't trolls. Those aren't people. These are people who have, like, a deep kind of skepticism of where she's coming from in this moment. I saw Grace Lee Boggs on a panel with Amiri Baraka. And at the time, he was celebrating that his son, Ras Baraka, was about to be mayor, that he had won some primary. It was like a, maybe it was Democracy Now. And Grace, like, you know, Grace was at this point well into her 90s, well past giving a fuck, and on air said, "But is that a good thing? What did that get us?"
Oh, shit.
She was like, "What did that get us before?" You know what I mean? Because she was being taped in Detroit, where we had a Black mayor forever. And
that's right.
And so she had lived through those kinds of, like, racial projects as some kind of progress and known the failures of them. And so I say that to say, like, this question, then when Amiri Baraka and Grace Lee Boggs and Angela Davis and Robin Kelly, and obviously these are all very visible people with names, and so we have an idea about their politics. But when we say that these, say they're just five friends or four friends who know each other or have respect for one another, and they have, like, criticism of one another, I still think that this step back from visibility is the answer there too, like, to go deep and to, like, I don't know, like, I will never have the life of a scholar. Like, I didn't even get my BA, you know? I didn't get my bachelor's. What? No, I didn't finish NYU. I got pregnant and started making other things, films and projects and, you're, organizations.
Like, this is when I was coming into my bosshood. I didn't need no damn degree. What are you talking about?
I wish
about?
I had finished, but I didn't. So I'll never be a scholar. But the life of a scholar has always been, like, interesting to me. And I wish that everyone could have it. I wish that everyone could have what Du Bois talked about, the life of the mind, or, like, you know, this concept that Buddha or Jesus or any of the people that we imagine, the concept of a retreat, like the years under a tree contemplating, or the 40 days in the desert, or, you know, so those moments when you can, like, step back. And I've tried to carve that out for myself where I could, and have managed my visibility to a certain extent. And sometimes it looks like a stunt. It looks like, here she go quitting Twitter again. But for me, it's like managing whatever this is, because these thousands of voices, and also forget the thousands of voices and the critics. Like, what am I saying? You know, am I saying something new? Am I saying something? I'm not talking about that bumper sticker shit. Like, is it kind or is it necessary? I'm not saying that. But, like, is it new? Am I saying this?
You're like, I ain't on no eat, pray, love shit. I'm talking about the real.
Yeah. Am I saying the same shit I've been saying? Like, and why is it important? Am I waking up, like, thinking, right, oh my God, Gaza got bombed. I need to tweet about it. Like, right, people need to hear what I got to say. They just sitting there waiting to see what you're hearing. Dream. What? Like, no, you know? And so those are the places I'm talking about. Like, that retreat gives us a chance to deepen our thinking, to come back and possibly offer new. And I'm sure there comes a time when
there is nothing new. And this kind of toggling back and forth between different folks makes it so that folks aren't a target, so that people don't grow egos, because all of this stuff feeds your ego, whether you're being attacked or celebrated.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think about that kind of stuff. You know, I don't want to be paralyzed. There have been times when I've been paralyzed. There have been times when I have been depressed, you know, by it. And I don't think that depression is something that we should avoid if that's what we need to be in and in that moment. But I want to get through it, and I want to, you know, be valuable, at least to the people that I love, if not to the wider world.
Facts. I love that. Let me circle back to Angela Davis, because you were talking about this and I was like, don't let me forget this question, child. So we're 100 days, a little bit more than 100 days out from the election. I would argue, although I will give credence to the notion that people always talk about elections being the most important elections, but actually, this is the fucking most important election in a generation. I don't care. Don't at me. Anyways.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I just read yesterday that people are losing their whole ass entire mind about Angela Davis saying that she plans to vote for Joe Biden. And you know, it's like I have a deep affinity here, because I feel like people weaponize what they think you should be rather than who the fuck you are.
Right.
So
yeah, yeah.
You know, you got all these people out here being like, well, Angela Davis says she finished vote for Joe Biden. And it's like, you know what? Stand on your own goddamn feet. That's number one. Number two, don't be talking about Angela. Let Angela speak for her damn self, because I know what she said was more complicated than that. But anyways,
yeah.
I want to ask you, as somebody who I know has a brilliantly politically astute mind that is both visionary and revolutionary and real all at the same time, how do we reconcile one's politics and worldview with the tactical approaches that we take to keep the fucking world from combusting? And frankly, is that even possible or desirable at this point? We already know the empire is like on its way to collapse. We're living in that right now. And there is a question about, well, do you fucking save the thing? And then there's also, I'm not done living. So fuck yeah. So I'm just curious where you're at with this. And, you know, give our listeners something to really chew on here.
Well, this is an eternal question. For as long as we have been on in this country, which is before it was a country, right? And I mean, this goes back to Garvey. This just goes back to like every single serious thinker that we've ever had. People far more brilliant and learned and capable than me. But do I struggle with it? Of course I do. I mean, I didn't vote for Obama either time. I go and I vote every 2 years. And every 4 years, write Shirley Chisholm in as my candidate, you know? Mm-hmm. And that for me is a protest against like the pageantry that is the presidential election anyway. The truth is that Angela Davis, unless I'm missing something, isn't a delegate, isn't a super delegate, doesn't have an electoral college vote. So while we do elect all of these other folks, and folks should absolutely show up to vote, I mean, when we look at Ahmaud Arbery and we look at like the fact that it took three district attorneys to get those Hicks that killed him, that murdered him, arrested, then we are talking about an electoral question, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, to arrest him, the abolitionists would say, you know, and is that justice? You know, like, is that the desired outcome? So, it's incredibly nuanced, more than we have time or capacity for in this moment on this phone call. But I will say that even though I'm deactivated, I saw that Angela Davis had said that. Someone sent it to me. Her answer was far more nuanced than I'm voting for Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. I may not write in Shirley Chisholm this year, you know? I didn't write in Shirley Chisholm for, you know, when Trump was. I actually see Trump as this, you know, not just a threat to this country, because I'm not invested in the survival of this particular nation. I don't think that it has a right to exist, right? But I also, at the same time, understand and knew, like, I didn't need for babies to be in cages and being guarded by predators and rapists to know that this man was evil incarnate and that it was going to be Black and brown people who got hurt by him first, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that is that kind of mitigation that we have to do in this Babylon. And we're here now. And that's the other kind of existential crisis that I'm having in this COVID moment is that I'm a traveler, you know? And, mm-hmm. you know, my friend Lene Denise uses this phrase, international local. You know, you hung out with her in Joburg. And it's like, and that's about like going places and, you know, knowing people and having relationships. And that's a privilege, by the way, that this U.S. passport gave us that not only doesn't exist, but may never exist again. Like, we are not on, we can't leave. But that said, I did have that privilege. I exercised that privilege from the time I was 19. I went to Ghana for a month with $180, you know? I've always traveled. And, you know, I just, we're trapped here. So then it is about like, well, what is this going to be? What is this place going to be? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the problem with someone like Trump is that he limits the ability. Him creating all these crises, I thought he limited the ability to truly have like a radical imagination around what this new world could be. But then Gen Y was like, no, we're going to do both things. We're going to at once. We're going to get Trump mm-hmm. out. We're going to imagine a world with no jails, with no prisons, with no cops. We're going to abolish ICE. We're going to abolish patriarchy. Like, it's amazing to see, you know. I forget the Indian goddess with all those arms, but it's like folks are like, you know, we're doing it all at once. And we have to, because that's what this moment requires.
You better come on.
Alice Walker, Nikki Giovanni, oh honey. And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Number one, racist mascots and statues. In the news this week, the football team from Washington State is retiring their name and their logo. This is great news. And also, what in the hell took you so long? Lady don't like no racist murals, racist flags, racist logos, racist mascots. We don't like racist nothing. And speaking of racist murals, it's probably time for the racist murals to come down in San Francisco. Washington High School has a racist mural that depicts white settlers stepping over the body of a dead indigenous person, alongside other horrible depictions of slavery. The murals themselves were painted in 1936, by artist Victor Aronoff during the New Deal. Victor was a prolific artist depicting important social commentary, studied under Diego Rivera, and later joined the Communist Party. And even though all of that is true, for more than 40 years, there have been concerns raised about these murals, in particular with Indigenous and Black students calling the murals that they pass every single day demoralizing and dehumanizing. People who I deeply respect, including Danny Glover, have opined that the murals, which frame the lobby to the school, should not be removed, that they should remain and be used to teach students about history. But I actually disagree. I think this mural belongs in a museum where it can be placed in proper historical context, not the entrance to a school. Anyways, in other news, things that Lady just ain't gonna do this week includes your president commuting the sentence of Roger Stone. Stone is a political ally of your president who was found guilty of interfering in an investigation into collaboration between Russian agents and the Trump campaign. You might remember that the Trump campaign allegedly colluded with Russia to interfere with the 2016 presidential election, ostensibly to help Trump win it. This is obviously terrible news for democracy in general. This pardon sends a clear message that this administration has no interest whatsoever in following rules, upholding any standards, or anything else like that. So All that to say, I think you should plan to see even more of this nonsense in advance of the upcoming presidential election. And please, by all means, Lord God, don't be fooled by poll numbers. What do poll numbers even mean when your president has a history of collaborating with countries who want to undermine what's even left of democracy here? Anywho, every single vote matters in this election cycle, and let's get to work like we really the fuck mean to win. Other things that Lady just ain't gonna do this week, and I wasn't even sure I was gonna talk about this, but I'm gonna do it. That red table talk where the tables were turned, I just wasn't feeling it. I'm just gonna save this one time and leave it all the way alone, but that shit was weird as fuck. I don't feel good about a woman who offered to help a young man who was leading a very troubled life and then somehow ends up in a relationship with him, which she then calls an entanglement. And yes, men are doing this all the time and they should be held accountable, but that does not exempt Jada from being held accountable too. That relationship, the way it was described, has less to do with Will and Jada's marriage than it does predatory behavior by Jada. August was an adult, but he was not in a good place. That entanglement was wholly inappropriate, and I'm just not here for it. In other news, here's what Lady loves this week. So, BLM. Black Lives Matter turned 7 years old this week, y'all, and I am all in my feels. Happy birthday, baby! What a wild ride it's been, and how grateful am I to be the smallest part of something truly historic. Let me read you this Facebook post from 7 years ago that I wrote. It's from July 16, 2013, and it says, Black Lives Matter is a collective affirmation and embracing of the resistance and resilience of Black people. It is a reminder and a demand that our lives be cherished, respected, and able to access our full dignity and determination. It is a truth that we are called to embrace if our society is to become human again. It is a rallying cry. It is a prayer. The impact of embracing and defending the value of Black life in particular has the potential to lift us all. Black Lives Matter asserts the truth of Black life that collective action builds collective power for collective transformation. Well, Ashe called it into being all those years ago, and we are still on that path. Happy birthday to the Black Lives Matter movement. Other things that Lady loves this week, before I get all weepy and things, is puppies, puppies, and more puppies. This week, Lady loves her new puppy. His name is Charlie Nelson Garza, and he is probably the best thing to happen to me this week. He's an American bulldog. He's super sweet, he's super stubborn, and he's also hilarious. Lady loves puppies. Ask me next week if I still love this puppy that's running all over my house, pooping and peeing everywhere. But anyways, I digress. Look out for young Charlie to have his own Instagram account. Yep, I think I am that kind of dog mom. Sorry, not sorry. And then lastly, things that Lady loves this week includes defeat by tweet. So I needed some inspiration in my life this week, and Defeat by Tweet, I think, is absolutely brilliant. Every single time Tupe Fiasco sends a tweet, you raise money for Black-led grassroots organizations that are working to build power for our communities. And we know that Trump is a tweeting machine. So what I love about this is that we're turning outrage into resources for our communities and resources for power building. Learn more about Defeat by Tweet on our socials. And of course, you can sign up to contribute at defeatbytweet.org. I needed this today, and I needed you today in particular. So thank you so much for joining us. Aww. And tell, I know you be in and out of the socials, but tell us where the good people can connect with you. If not on the socials, if somebody wanted to holler at you, where could they spit at you real quick?
I hate to sound like Badu, but just send me good energy. You know, I'll catch it. That's astral projected me. I'll catch it.
This is aspirational for me. You have to understand. Let me take that note, because I'm finna say that shit the very next time I'm asked. Just send me good vibes. You know, I'm gonna get it. AKA, don't holler at me. I'll holler at you. It for Lady Don't Take No, but I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where you used to have a commute. We appreciate you joining us, and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what's on your mind, tell us what you like, and tell us what you just don't want to take no more of. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We're also on Facebook at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about the things that you hear on this show on our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. Please subscribe and write us a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Latyrix. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, it's time for all racist statues and monuments and murals to fall. Entanglements are passive-aggressive ways of saying, I was in a relationship I ain't had no business being in. And polls are just a snapshot in time. So keep working hard and work like you plan to win. That's right, I said it, because Lady Don't Take No. Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a woman ish. She won't speak, less of something worse, singing don't play. The girl take herself so serious, people stare curious. She got a natural way, her hips sway furious, yeah, luxurious, carries herself like the cutest most. Love y'all.